Hello everyone, welcome to Computer Science E75 section. This is the live and taped section. For those of you watching from home via the live feed, you're welcome to join us in the Illuminate classroom where you can ask questions. Cato is currently logged in, yes? Logged in? Okay, logged in over there. He can answer questions directly or for particularly heinous questions or interesting ones, he'll be able to forward them over to me and we'll go over it here in class. So, this week we did primarily PHP, I guess kind of in the second half. David went over quite a bit of the htaccess files in the first half, and I certainly think that htaccess files are very interesting and can be very useful, but the stuff that I want to focus on primarily this week are some of the stuff from last week, such as being sure you know how to log in via SSH into the web server, logging in via SFTP so that you can upload files, because you can use the panel to upload files to the web server, but it's kind of a pain because you have to do one at a time, so it's not the most ideal thing. And then we'll go into PHP, and we'll talk a little bit about htaccess files, but like I said, I don't want to focus too much on them now. So first off, I guess we'll just talk about SFTP and SSH. So last week I went over this just a little bit. And if you happen to be on a Mac, you are, So if you happen to be on a Mac, you have it pretty much already set up for you because you can just open up the terminal application and from there you have a Unix prompt from which you can log into SSH or SFTP. So if you are on a Windows computer, you should look at the course website and from there there are some guides for which to download that tell you how to download secure FX and secure CRT for SFTP and SSH, respectively. You need two separate programs for that. And so, of course, on a Mac, you can also download separate SFTP clients that will let you connect to SFTP servers. And there are numerous ones for Windows, for Mac, Linux, Unix, whatever your operating system of choice may be. So just again, to SSH into something, and if you have secure CRT, you'll be presented with a menu of which you can select what you want to log into. From there, it's probably easiest to just create a new shortcut that goes to your domain name and with the username and the password that you were given in the email. So on a Mac, though, or Linux or Unix, you just want to use the command SSH, and from there, your username at the domain that you choose. So you'll be asked to enter in your password, and from there you're logged in and prompted with the command line at that point. So from there we can do just the various things. You can do ls for a list, cd to change directory. So just doing an ls really quick, we can see that I have some domains here. So go into the public HTML is the one that I want because that has all of my files. From there, do a list. You can see this is kind of the default. I left in one of the domains that I have here is the default configuration that comes with cs75.net. So from there, you can use your text editor of choice. I believe David just installed Emacs in the past week since the last section, so you can use that. It's big, it's bloated, but it works. Another one that's popular is Nano. You can just type nano, just start a new file. You can do nano space and then a file name to edit a file or to create a new file with that file name. Any questions from there? So I suppose I should mention that once you log in, since you are logged into a remote machine, it will behave the same way on the PC and on the Mac. So all of these commands apply from any operating system that you log in with SSH. Let's see. Okay, so SFTP, you can actually use the command line from here to SFTP into a particular site. I find that to be somewhat cumbersome, and personally, I use one called CyberDuck. It's a free download online. You literally just have to look for it. This is for Mac. For Windows, the one that we recommend is SecureFX. This is actually different from the one that we're going to recommend in the course. That one, I believe, is Mac SFTP, but for all intents and purposes, they do the same thing. You can feel free to download whichever one you prefer. Once you log in, you see something very similar, kind of a GUI representation of what you just saw, and from there you can drag files to the server and from the server to upload and download, respectively. The great thing about CyberDuck is that you see there's an edit button right here. If I happen to see a file that I want to edit, so go into domains and this one right here, public HTML, this index.php file, for example, I click edit, and it opens up that that file in a text editor called TextWrangler. And from there, I can edit the file. When I save it, CyberDuck detects that it's been saved, and it automatically uploads it to the server, which is very, very convenient if you want to just make all of your changes on the server, not have a backup on your own computer. Of course, I do recommend a backup on your own computer just in case the unspeakable happens and we all lose all of our domains, or not our domains, but at least the contents of those domains. I really doubt that's going to happen given how well set up it is, but still, always a good idea to have a backup. So, any questions on that? Nothing. Okay, so I guess just very quickly, I'll show you also logging into the panel, cs75.net. So of course you go to panel.cs75.net, or you can also go to your domain, :123.42s, and it should be exactly the same thing. It should forward you again to the panel. So from there you log in with the email address, and the username and the password that you were provided in the email. And you can pick your domain, go to files, and you'll see essentially exactly the same thing that you saw in SSH and in SFTP. You can upload and download these files, change the permissions, etc. So last week we talked mostly about, or only about, HTML and CSS, how to create a static web page with XHTML or with CSS. And so that's all well and good, but there's actually a lot more that can be done. And so, of course, the rest of this course, we're just going to be making more and more increasingly dynamic web pages. So for those of you who have completed Project Zero or are well on your way to doing so, you may have noticed that it's kind of a pain that on every page you either have to copy and paste or just do some sort of other trick in order to get your navigation bar, for example, on one side of the page. And so with a dynamic website, one of the many things that you can do is just create that list dynamically from one file. And so all you would have to do is create that one file and just reference that particular one in every web page. But I'm getting a little bit ahead of myself, as I'm sure we'll talk about this in the upcoming weeks, or you can figure it out yourself with the limited PHP knowledge that you may have. So who here is familiar with programming? Anything at all? Okay, so most people. So hopefully many of you understand already the concepts of variables and of conditions and of loops. So PHP is no different than any of these. Of course, it has variables and conditions and loops. Let's see. So here, this is, again, TextWrangler. This is the text editor that I use, and I tend to prefer it because it does what's called syntax highlighting. So if you remember from lecture, it was a lot more obnoxious, but on the screen, it would actually, the text editor that David was using, it would highlight the various elements and such so that you could easily identify which was which, and this does that sort of thing as well. So to create a PHP file, you just have to do an open bracket ?PHP, and on many servers, you actually can omit that PHP. It's just sort of a shortcut to omit it. Good practice says that you should put it, but honestly, I think if you were to look at all of my PHP files, you'd find mixed. Sometimes I'm really good about putting the PHP, sometimes I'm not. So don't worry about it. If you get an error, then you'll have to keep that in mind. So, yes? Can you leave a space? No, it has to be no spaces. So the open bracket ?PHP, no spaces at all in that. So if you're going to do it, you do have to do it that way. And so the alternative, or in order to close that, you do the opposite. You omit the PHP this time in every case, but you just do ?, and close bracket. And in here, between these two brackets and ?, you can insert your PHP code. It'll be executed by the server on the server, and whatever its output is will be outputted onto the screen. If it doesn't have any output, then it won't output anything at all. So we can define a variable or create a variable by doing the dollar sign and then a variable name. And so, as David showed in lecture, you can actually create, the variable name can be any alphanumeric character, basically, but it's generally good practice to name it something that's useful for you to know, so that I'm sure for those of you who have programmed before know that you can get a lot of variables and it can get very, very confusing, so you want to be sure to label them properly. You can also do comments in PHP. You can do the C++ style double slash, and that will create a comment for this line. You can also do the slash asterisk, and that will do a multiple line comment. And that comment will continue until you do an asterisk slash. So for the single line comment, you just do the double slash. And so this is useful, especially if you want to document what on earth you're doing. If you create your website, you want to go back later, find out what you had done, what you were thinking for each of these lines of code, certainly do recommend commenting. And even though I don't know what the upcoming projects will entail, I imagine that there will have to be some comments involved. So do get in the habit of writing good comments for your PHP files. But I digress. We'll get back to this variable. So like David said, there's not really a notion of typing necessarily. It's all kind of done in the background, kind of transparently by the PHP interpreter. And so you can create strings just by putting them in quotation marks. So this is a string. And of course, every line you have to end with a semicolon, just like in the very popular C or C++. You can also do, let's do $B, and that can be an integer, so 1, 2, 3. You also have booleans, true or false, doubles, all of this sort of thing. So one of the great things about strings is that you can either create a string with a double quote or with a single quote. You can mix the quotes, but whichever you start the string with, you have to end it with that. So you can exchange this double quote for a single quote, and it will behave the same way. But the great thing about this is that whenever you are outputting XHTML, for example, from your PHP file, as many of you know, XHTML elements will often have double quotation marks to define the values of particular attributes. So for example, a, href equals, then double quote, the URL, end quote, so on and so forth. And so by using the single quotes, you can actually put inside of the string all of the double quotes that you want. So I can actually put my a, href equals, and then HTTP URL, and so on, close that with double quotes, and it won't break the string. If now I were to actually create this string with the double quotes instead of the single quotes, I would have to escape the double quotes so that PHP doesn't think I am. Give me just one second. So that PHP doesn't think that I am closing the string and I have some random characters and then I'm opening the string again. And you can escape characters, of course, with the backslash directly preceding. So you can choose whichever way you want to do it. I think it's a lot cleaner, especially when doing XHTML, to use the single quotes, and then you can just output directly. It's very, very convenient. Now, question?
Is there any construct, like in Perl, where you can quote something with the angle bracket, delimiter, semicolon, and then a bunch of text that doesn't need to be an escape, and then delimiter again?
So, I'm sorry, can you ask that question one more time? I don't think I understand.
In Perl, you can quote something by putting angle bracket, and then a string that's not going to be in the text that you want. And then you...
Oh, okay, so can you...
String,
okay,
and then,
so...
And then you can put a whole bunch of text where the characters don't have to be escaped, and then when you're done with that, you can put that delimiter string again. Like, a lot of people use EOF.
So can you use, just like in Perl, are there any constructs like in Perl to define strings other than that? Not that I know of. No, I suspect not. And I think that you can, just one sec. So you can actually use, you can actually use regular expressions and evaluate regular expressions in PHP, but it doesn't have it's not as prevalent in PHP as it is in Perl. And in fact, regular expressions, too many of them in a PHP document can impact the performance just because they're so robust, I suppose, and powerful. You have a question? Can I make the text bigger? Yeah, if I knew how to do that. Let's try, nope. I bet it would have to do with the preferences. So, so as much as I love this program, it's not the easiest thing to do to change the text size. Oh, that's not the one I wanted. Okay, so I'll work on this during the 5-minute break, and then we'll try to get the text a little bit bigger for everybody. Yes, Kato. I'm sorry?
If you go to preferences, it's an editor defaults.
Editor defaults. Oh, Kato knows his stuff. All right. How about that? Okay, thank you, Kato. So in Text Wrangler, in preferences, in it is in editor defaults. Is that better, text size? Okay, thank you. So to go back, you can, when defining strings, whether it be in a variable or if you're just outputting a string directly, you can actually reference other variables as long as the string is enclosed in double quotes. So for example, in this string, I can say, here is an integer, and then just reference my variable $b. And so this can be also very useful just so that you don't have to concatenate numerous strings altogether. But this does not work for the single quotes. And so you have to, if you are doing this in such a way that you are outputting an element, an XHTML element at the same time, you have to be sure to escape any double quotes that you have inside there. Okay.
And that will say, here is an integer, 123?
Yes, here's an integer, colon, space, 123. Now, at the end of this question mark, angle bracket, you can actually output whatever XHTML you would want. So just like any other HTML document, let's see. And so because it is outside of the angle bracket question marks, you actually will not, the server will not parse this. It'll just be sent directly to the browser. So in this way, you can mix the PHP with the XHTML. And although for particularly long pages, it can get kind of messy and kind of heinous, it's actually very, very convenient. So you don't have to have just one of these angle question marks. You can actually mix it in within all of the XHTML. So within the body, you could just have a bunch of PHP code that defines the body or outputs the body in some way. So loops and such. So we have several types of loops in PHP, just like we went over in class. So there is the for loop. So in this case, for those of you who are familiar with C++ loops, it's almost exactly the same, the variable names. So you have your initiator, then your condition to match, and then your accumulator or whatever sort of condition you want to have to increase or decrease the variable. And from there, you can input whatever you would like. So this is just exactly like what David showed in class, where he outputted 10 or so of the Moulin Rouge images just by using a for loop. We also have a while loop, which matches the condition inside of these parentheses. So while something is true, so while I is less than 6, for example, it will continue running this loop. And so at some point, you have to be sure to be able to change this this variable that's being tested upon. Otherwise, you can have very easily an infinite loop. You can even do, if you were really wanted to be horrible to our server, you could do while parentheses true, and that will just cause an automatic infinite loop. And I don't think we would be much too happy with that for you soaking up all of our processor time. So there is actually a way that you can create all of these files without having to upload them to the server, and that's with the XAMPP software. And so Cato actually created some very good instructions on how to install this particular software. And so you can find this linked off of the course webpage, but right here you will find instructions for both Windows and Mac, and it will install a whole host of services, including Apache, PHP, MySQL, which we will be using later on, and probably some others that may or may not be relevant. Let's see. What other services are there? Well, the important ones are all right here. So the Apache configuration and logs are all found on this very handy user's guide from Cato. Okay. So let's create our first PHP document. So we'll do this one somewhat simply. I don't want to pass variables from one page to another, but what I just want to do perhaps is, let's see, what would be a good example? Anybody have anything dynamic they want to try? Anything at all that's somewhat simple, but a little bit more complex perhaps than showing 10 of the same images. All right, so the usual, let's go grab a good example page to get some XHTML. So view, Moulin Rouge source. So it looks like he actually still has it outputting multiple versions of this, multiple copies of this image. So here I've just copied the source just as a baseline here. And so we'll get rid of all of these because I don't want to deal with them. All right, so here we have a default one. So let's say perhaps that we want to dynamically generate the title. So maybe you have a list of titles somewhere, or you have maybe just a dictionary of words. You want to randomly pick one. Well, unfortunately, I don't happen to have a dictionary with me, or at least on the computer, so we'll just have to generate some random characters. So you can just to get ready, I suppose you can just do all of your PHP before the actual XHTML. This is, of course, by preference, and you can do it however you like. But generally what I do is I do any preparation before the HTML begins, and then that way I can just have the output intermingled with the XHTML. So let's just create a... All right. So I guess first we'll just do it somewhat easily, and we'll just create a variable called title. And we'll use this to inject the title into the XHTML. So let's call this, for example, Dan's live section page. So of course, don't forget to end all of your lines with the semicolon, or that will cause lots of headaches, because instead of just gracefully failing, it'll gracefully fail, just in that it won't show you anything, or if you're lucky, it'll show you an error that might be somewhat cryptic. Do you have a question?
Yes, is this an XHTML file or a PHP file? Like when you save it, can
you save it as PHP or that XHTML? Oh, okay, so is this an XHTML file or a PHP file? We will save this as a PHP file. But when the server is interpreting the PHP, it does not actually interpret this part. It just spits this part out from the server to the browser.
So if I create a file, I can't create an XHTML file for the PHP, and I can create a PHP file for the XHTML.
Right, you cannot create an XHTML file and put PHP in it, unless the server is configured to allow you to do that. But I suspect that most will not. That most servers will assume that a .htm or a .html file is not dynamically generated, and it is only straight up XHTML. So here we've defined a variable, and so it'd be pretty easy at this point to just inject it. So you don't have to put these angle bracket question marks on separate lines. You can just put it on the same line. And David showed you an example to use print, but you can also use echo and echo out the variable name. So if we were to save this, let's save this as a index.php file. And I'll upload it to my domain via CyberDuck, that SFTP program. So domains, we'll use this one as an example, public. And where is my PHP file? Here it is. All right, so it's uploaded, and I was able to do this just by literally dragging the file from the desktop where I had saved it and dropping it here in this SFTP program. Yes?
Did you have to do anything to get the correct permissions by default?
No, I didn't. So by default, it sets the 644 permissions. And so let's see, for those of you not familiar with permissions, it's basically the three digits represent an accumulation of owner or of rights, basically, for different groups. So the first digit represents owner, represents permissions for the owner or the person who had created the file. And so in this case, I can read the file, I can write the file, but it says that I don't have execute permission, which some servers actually will require that PHP files have the execute bit enabled. This one does not, so you don't have to check this box or you don't have to enable it. So since, if you remember from lecture, David said that we are running some software called SUPHP, SUPHP, that runs as the user. So whenever I go to my domain, the PHP file is being executed as if I were running it. So in that case, group or others, which is basically everyone else, does not need to have access to that file. So we can actually uncheck the read permissions for group and others. And this is perhaps the safest thing, and this is what you should do for all of your PHP files that you upload, is that you should change them from 644 to the 600. You can do that via the command line with chmod, chmod, and or you can do it from your SFTP program as well. And so if, though, for the files that are read by the web server directly by Apache, so for example, any XHTML files or any files that may be downloaded, so maybe you have images or PDFs or something like that that have to be downloaded by the end user via the browser from through Apache, those need to be 644 because the Apache web server runs as a different user, does not run as you. So others have to have this checked. You have to have that checked, otherwise it will not have the permissions to read that particular file. So as you can imagine, Apache has to read the file in order to send it to somebody else. It kind of reads it in and then spits it out to somebody else on the internet. So for your PHP files, leave them at 600, and that should be sufficient. And so if we were to go back to Firefox here, we see that we've already created our first successful PHP page, and quite easily, I might add, even though there's no content, but you can see the title at the very top says Dan's Live Section Page. You can see that very sneakily I did insert an apostrophe, a single quote in there, and just to show you that when you do the double quotes, it does not escape when you use a different quote style. Yes?
What's the difference between print and echo?
Print is a command where you have to use the, okay. Let me show this code again. So right here with echo, it's really, I think there's probably more details on the PHP manual page, but essentially echo, you just have to do echo space and then whatever it is you want to be outputted. It's very much like a command line, the command line echo. But with print, you need to enclose it in parentheses and put whatever it is within the parentheses. And so you probably in the end have a bit more control over what is being printed with print. But in the end, I find Echo to be sufficient for what I needed to do, just to spit text out into the XHTML. And so, I'm sorry?
The spaces aren't gonna, any extra white spaces aren't going to matter in that context, right?
In which context?
In the context of the title element or most all the HTML elements.
Oh, yeah, so the extra white space is not going to matter. So this actually, it's not going to matter for almost any element. The thing is that here...
Yeah, there's no extra white space there, right?
Yeah, because this PHP will be replaced by whatever is echoed out. All of this white space, even though there's quite a bit, will be erased. And so even if we save this, well, let's give this a shot. So if we insert a whole bunch of white space here, we can see that we have a bit of space between the title open and the close tag of the open and the close title tag. Oof, having a hard time saying that one. And we'll try re-uploading that. Close this permissions. And so one of the things you'll notice that when I re-upload it, I haven't tried this actually with another one, so I'm not sure if it's my SFTP client or the server itself is changing the permissions back to 644. So you'll want to just be sure to give the correct permissions. And then we can run it again. So I've refreshed the page. If we view the page source, we can see that it has removed all the white space because there is all of that white space was just soaked up by the PHP interpreter and it was not outputted. If we had echoed a lot of white space, a lot of slash ends and the double quotes, then you would have outputted white space, but in this case it doesn't matter. But to go back just a little bit to your question about the difference between print and echo, this actually is a good time to show you the PHP documentation. This is truly, truly excellent. I can't tell you how many times I've forgotten a command or what have you, and you just go here and you can search for the command, or you can search for examples on particular commands. So just search for, in the function list, print. After it comes up, it tells you first the PHP versions that this instruction is valid for, so PHP 4 and PHP 5, and it tells you what it's supposed to do. It says print, it's to output a string. It tells you how it's supposed to work. So in this case, the print function is defined as inputting a string of a particular argument, and it can output actually an integer. And so you can probably use this to be able to determine some sort of error code if, for whatever reason, print failed. I'm sure it's almost always not going to fail. It just seems unlikely to do it. And so here you can see that they've kind of already answered this question. They say, for a short discussion about the differences between print and echo, take a look at this particular URL. All right, so what's the difference between echo and print? Or put another way, which is faster, echo and print? So this basically will give you additional information about the difference between the two. And so this does seem to imply that there is a performance hit in one of them for particular types of strings. And so this is something that you want to look out for, especially if you want your page to be absolutely flying. But I must say that the server that we have now is actually really quite quick, and so you can probably, even if all of this time echo for whatever reason just takes a little bit longer to output something than print, you I'm sure will hardly ever notice the difference. Okay. So if we go back to the PHP manual, and I just want to show you a little bit more. So it shows you the parameters, and it looks like it always returns one, so it doesn't look like there's much to do there. And it also shows you some examples, how it works, how to use it, and they even insert some comments that tell you how particular things may function or how particular things may change the how the function behaves, what have you. So keep scrolling down. Keep scrolling past the examples. Have some notes. They even tell you related commands. So echo, as you saw, printf in flush. Flush is mostly used for caching. That's kind of an interesting one. And if you scroll down even farther, you'll see that people are allowed to add comments about all of these commands. And so sometimes you'll see people talking about some text or some bit of code that's a little bit faster than others and how to use it more efficiently. Sometimes the comments are an absolute mess and are not that great, but many times you can get some very useful information from the comments. And so frequently, with the knowledge that you have, even right now about PHP, you can go and create a very well-rounded sort of web page just by looking up the functions that you need on the PHP.net manual and by reading the documentation, reading the comments from there. And so this is truly great, especially since we don't, I mean, it's really boring to have to teach all of these commands by themselves. Like if we said, okay, well, in order to do this, you have to use this function, or to use this other thing, you have to use a different particular function. So you can do all of this on your own. It's sort of a cheat sheet of sorts. Okay, so back to this XHTML document. So here's the source from the page, and you can see that the PHP, the SuPHP program, has actually removed all of the angle bracket quote or angle bracket question marks and replaced it with whatever has been outputted, which is pretty handy. You can put even sometimes what I've done, if you want to put comments in your site but you don't want to put it as an XHTML comment, because you don't want, every time it's an XHTML comment, people who view the source can see whatever comments you are putting. One of the things that you may do is just to, for example, right here, just open up a quick XHTML, or I'm sorry, a quick PHP angle brackets, and just insert your comment here if you wanted to hide it for whatever reason. Okay. Let's see. So we talked about loops and variables, and just like in many other forms of programming languages, PHP also has a notion of arrays, or a variable that points to multiple values. So we can create an array here. Let's do that by just saying, all right, TFs, for example. And in order to reference a particular item in an array, you use square bracket and then an index number, and it always starts from zero and it climbs up to however many indices there are. So just for example, when we had earlier our title variable, we had one bit of string that was in here. But when you have an array, of course, TFs, for example, it's something like a table, I guess you could consider it, in memory, where one column is just a list, or I'm sorry, an index for the values that are in the right column. And so in this way, even though it starts from 0 and it counts to 4, we actually have 5 values in here, and we can populate it with all of the TF's names. So myself, Dan, Daniel, Cato, Chris. Oops, I'm forgetting one. John. My mistake. All right. So in a similar way, we can define that in PHP by saying that TF's item 0 here is Dan. TF's item 1 is Daniel. TF's item 2 is Cato. TF's item 3 is Chris. And TF's item 4 is John. So now the way to reference this again is pretty much the same way as it's defined. Now instead of, for example, if we were to replace this echo title with one of the TFs, we can just use in the square bracket reference one of the two, for example. So echo tfs2, which would point to Cato. So if we were to save this, upload it, now instead of having the Dan's Live section page, it would actually output Cato as the title. And so in a similar way, let's switch this back to title. We can now use loops to iterate through all of these or all of the items in this array and just output them very nicely. So let's get rid of some of this obnoxious white space here. Now somebody help me out. I want to create here in this div. I'll get you started with this. I want to be able to output all of the TF's names with a line break between them. How would I do that? Somebody get me started. Just anything.
For paren dollar I equals zero.
For paren dollar I equals zero.
Semicolon.
Yep.
I less than four.
I less than four.
Or maybe I less than five. I forget how many you made.
Yeah, it's I did five items total, so it would be
is
I less than five.
Well, find out the length of your array.
You can find out the length of your array. Let's see. Oops.
Maybe we should just use a different loop.
Yeah, you can use a different loop.
So you don't have to know the length.
You can certainly do a for each. Another thing you can do is, if you were just being really lazy and you knew exactly how many things you wanted, you could just list each one individually, of course, which is a bit of a pain. In this case, we do know that it's less than five, and we can continue with that. We can use a for each loop, which would iterate through all of the ones in the list. So, but we started out with this one, so let's go ahead and finish this one up. Yep. So now what? So we have our loop. So now it's going to execute the commands or the functions in this loop for five times from 0 to 0 through 4. Yep, so echo tfs, and then in the bracket you can insert the I. Now what? Line break.
You want to put a line break?
Yep.
Tagging.
Oh, okay, so yeah, you use the concatenator, which is just the period, and then you can insert your line break tag. And so now if we save this.
Maybe a slash n.
Yep. You can certainly put in a slash n if you just wanted to tidy up the XHTML. But since that would show up as white space in the XHTML, that wouldn't output in the browser. Of course, you actually need a br tag, a break tag, in order for that to get that to work. So I kind of suspect that this is not going to show up very well, just because
it's all black.
It's all black. Yep, that's right. But we will just highlight everything, and so you can see that all of the items from this array have been output. And so this is just the beginning of what I was mentioning before with the navigation, where you can just input all of your navigation into an array of some kind and then just output all of that in a for loop on your page or whatever you want, really. Okay. Go back here. So one of the other things that we talked about in lecture was actually passing data or passing variables from one script to another. And you can do that several ways. You can either encode it directly into the URL. So after the PHP, if you put a question mark, you can do the variable name. So in this case, we'll create a new variable called maybe just A, and do equals and then whatever the data might be. And so in this case, it has to be pretty simple. You're not going to be able to transfer large strings or large amounts of data in this, nor would you necessarily want to, because being a URL, the people that are visiting your web page would be able to see exactly what you're doing. And so this is kind of convenient. If you do want them to save particular outputs from your dynamic web page, but in some cases you don't want that. So let's just say that A is equal to 1 in this case. So right now it's not actually going to look any different because the PHP is going to execute and it doesn't do anything with this variable, but we can actually modify our text or our PHP to be able to do this. So I'll just comment this out for now. And instead what I'll do is I will echo out TFs with, oops. So whenever something is transmitted in this way, it's always put into one of the super global variables. So if you remember, there was the $_POST, $_GET, and there's even one for the lazy among us, I believe is a request here. And so in this way, it'll capture both every GET and POST request, and it puts them into an array. So request here is an array, and so we are expecting a variable to be named A, which you can actually insert in that way, and the output from that will be 1 in the case of the URL that we had, and it will be inserted into this TF's variable. Let's try this one more time. Whoops. And so you can see that one, as we showed here, was Daniel, and that's exactly what it did. If we were to change this value from 1 to 2, we see that we change the results. And so this is actually the easiest way, not this specific code exactly, but doing this sort of variable passing is the easiest way to get your PHP code hacked. And that is because a lot of people don't do the checks on the variables that are passed into their code from here. So let's say that instead of actually getting something out of a variable, what I'm doing is I'm loading up the contents of a particular file for whatever reason and ejecting them into the XHTML. So there are a number of reasons why you might do this. Perhaps you just have one PHP file and a number of different files that have all of the content of your page, for example. And so if you don't sanitize the data that's coming in from one of these requests, you might actually get yourself into a lot of trouble. Because now instead of using this request to get the data from the TF's array, let's say that I was using this data to obtain, like I said, some sort of file on the server, then what they could do is just try to get any file that you have permissions to do just by hacking the output or the input that goes into the URL. So whenever you do something that is like this, be very, very careful about what the end result could be. You have to sanitize the output and make sure it's not code. And certainly when we start talking about databases, that's going to be the same. It's going to essentially be the same sort of thing where they're called SQL injection attacks, SQL injection attacks. And what people have done is they've actually inserted SQL code into a form, for example. And so it causes the whole thing to crash, and they can actually make your database erase. They can erase the contents of your database through that. And so, again, I'm getting a little bit ahead of myself. I'm just trying to say that you should really be careful about what you're doing. And if you are careful and diligent about reading the PHP manual, you will see a lot of warnings that people have about going particular methods with functions that may cause your files to crash or people to use them in some malicious way. So, let's see. There's another way that we can pass information rather than just encoding it directly into the URL, and that is with a form. So I think now I'm sick of highlighting everything, so I'll just make the background color white so that we'll have black text against the white background, and I'll just create a form. So I form action, and in this case I'll just reference itself. Oops. So what I'm doing here is essentially just typing up a short form that allows someone to enter a username and a password. If I save it and upload it, oops, looks like I somehow quit CyberDuck. Just give me a second to upload this file. So now we have two things here, but one of the big things that I forgot was obviously a submit button, but that's okay for now. So what I have is a username and a password field, and the great things about defining that type password is that it automatically hides the data just from prying eyes. So as you can see, I defined as part of this element type to be password. There's some other attributes that you can define as well, such as the length and some other things. And with CSS, you can actually make it look pretty cool. But for now, that's the gist of it. Yes?
I have a question from Anne in the virtual classroom.
Okay.
And she asks,
how do you sanitize data? How do you sanitize data? Okay, so there's a number of ways to do that. It depends really on what the data is. So let's say that let's use that example that I was talking about before where you are referencing files in the file system, for example. And so let's say for just a minute that I have a couple of pages worth of content. So I may have my main page, and I may have let's just say page 2, page 3. And in my XHTML, let's just say that within these three files that are just regular text files, I have XHTML, that where all it is just some just the body from a particular XHTML page. And in this way, I can just create a bunch of, it's sort of like a very simple template system around it. So I may have just within a particular division in my web page, so I can export the contents of one of these files. And so if I did this perhaps the not so great way, and I actually referenced from my index.php file, let me use the brighter marker. If I did this in such a way that I did in the URL index.php question mark and then page equals main, for example, and then what I did in my code was actually read this file, just say, okay, well, I know that this file is in tilde for username and then public HTML, and then under pages, for example, and then I appended right here, concatenator, the post, the result of this data, so $_post, and then page. This is a very dangerous thing to do because what you're basically saying is, so let's just say this is not the proper way to do it, but if I was allowed to just simply echo out the contents of this file, there is actually a command that can do that somewhat easily. It's not called echo, but so if it echoed the contents of the file from here, this is a very dangerous thing to do because now instead of just putting main, somebody can, for example, just change this to be something completely different. So maybe it was, what's that?
Like an asterisk.
Yeah, an asterisk or whatever that would match anything. And so that would return for particularly astute people or for people that were able to, you know, hack this and figure out what it was doing exactly. It could just return whatever it was that they wanted. So whatever you had access to, that would be a very, very, very bad way of doing it. So instead of doing that, by sanitizing it, what you have to do is just do this more indirectly. So you could say that you know you have three pages. You have the main page, page two, and page three, and then you could create a variable of your own. Let's say, you know, $pages, for example. That's an array. And instead of creating, and instead of just very blindly trusting this sort of content, you can just reference a particular number in the array. So index.php %page equals zero. Oh, this is a bad example, because these are two similarly named. So instead I could have, let me name this array content. And so now the request here is for page, is for the zeroth page. And so instead of doing this very bad idea of just echoing or getting the contents and spitting it out, what you can do is actually just say, okay, well, I know that page zero represents the main page, and I can output that file. That way, if they change this, your code won't recognize what it is that they've changed it to, and it won't output anything. You might default to some sort of a 404 page, redirect them to a 404 page or something like that. And so it's difficult to talk about every type of sanitization, just because there's so many different types of poor code writing or just something that you may miss, that it's difficult to do that. So just try to abstract the inputs from the outputs as much as you can, and then that way you will be safe generally. So I think we actually have to take a 5-minute break. Right now seems to be a good time to do it, and when we come back we'll talk a little bit more about this form and sending data from one PHP page to another. Okay, everyone. Hello, welcome back. So we had a couple of good questions during the break. There was one that said, in terms of intellectual property, how do I make sure that my PHP code isn't downloaded? And so by default, you don't have to really worry about this. This code is that we've typed in PHP is not going to be sent from the server to a typical web browser, because it will be parsed by the PHP interpreter first. Only if the server is somehow misconfigured and for whatever reason it doesn't parse it, would you have to worry about that. But you would know immediately, because it would not, you know, large gaps in your web page would actually show up. Another reason you would have to worry about that is if you were doing, like I mentioned before, a poor job of making sure to sanitize your inputs, and it was just outputting stuff blindly, they could actually somehow figure out the path of your index.php file and find the contents that way. But if they're smart enough to know how to do that, it's probably not your code that you have to worry about. So I glossed over early on in the hour using SSH and SFTP. So again, I just want to reiterate that you can log in to the server with SSH. And SSH, again, is just a protocol like HTTP. There are a number of programs that speak this protocol, so to speak. And so you can use SSH from the command line or from the terminal window in macOS. Or if you go to the resources page on cs75.net, there is a very nice how-to SSH to cs75.net from Windows document. Click on that. It downloads a PDF, and it gives you instructions on how to download, install, and use SecureCRT so that you can modify these files directly on the server without having to worry about SFTPing in and all of that sort of thing. And so I did actually go through and take a look. So before, I mentioned that it's possible to just blindly output content. And so one of the ways that you can actually do that is with the echo command. You can use echo. Oh, I'm using the dark one again. Hold on. Echo. And generally, you will want to try to avoid doing this. File get contents. And then a file name. And this way, the file get contents command will actually read in a particular file, and then with echo it'll output all of that. And so if you did a file get contents and your PHP file, it would output all of the code. This is something you really want to avoid doing. This is an example of something you probably don't want to do unless you really are sure that you know what you're doing. I say that and I'm actually using this. So you can use it, you just have to be really, really very careful, and this is what I said, that you have to sanitize your inputs. If we keep going with, well, we are going to be keep going, but I'm sure pretty soon, maybe not today, but pretty soon I'll show you how some of the PHP code that I use, and this is just one example where you can actually use a file get contents reasonably safely. Let's move back to what we were working on before. So we were working on this form to be able to transfer data from this web page, or from this dynamic PHP page, to another one. And so you can reference the same page. It's possible to do that. All you have to do is put all of the code that parses this information just somewhere in the document. Depending on how you feel about it, you may want to post that information to a separate page that parses that information. It really depends on how you want to do it. So let's see. All right. So now let's say up here. No. Okay. So let me show you then what this page looks like. So the live section page is here with the username, and I typed in a password. I don't have a submit button, so I can't really do much with that. So I'll have to add a submit button. Where's my code? Input name. Let's see. And I think it's submit. Oh, I have to upload that. Input type. Input type, yes. Yes, thank you. No, that's not the right one. Sorry? Yeah, I can do the value, and that would show up the name of the button. So, but for now, I'll do this. So it's the input type of submit. Upload this page. So now I have a submit button, and if I click the button, it posts the data, but since there is nothing to know what to do with it, it didn't do anything with that. So let's go ahead and create some code that does that. So what do you say, for simplicity, we actually reference a different page altogether. So instead of referencing back to itself, it's going to use a PHP file called form.php to actually process this information. So we'll save that, and I'll have to upload it, but what I want to do is create a new one. We'll copy all of this just and clean it up in just a second, so we don't need any of this stuff, nor do we need this stuff. I suppose, so back here I just had an errand request A. This isn't going to do anything at all, just because there's no command, so we can just get rid of that. So for right now, the index page is only going to be this very simple PHP where it echoes out the title, and that's it, displays a form. So I'll save that to my domain. And remember that I've been lazy about it, but you should be sure that your permissions are set to 600 and not, oops, to 600 and not to 644 for your PHP files. Now back to this. Right, so this is going to be the section page form processor. So now we don't need this form anymore because we already have it on the other page, but just for right now, I'm just going to leave it right here. We'll delete it in just a second so that I can remember what the name of these variables are. So you can see that I did a form method as post. So what you can do is just echo out that post information, user. You can also echo out post, password if you really want it to be mean and nasty to somebody that's trying to log into your web page. So let's see, I called it form.php. I have to find it on my messy desktop. Upload. All right. So now let's give this a shot. All right, so I'm going to type in username and password. And so you can see that even though I put the echoes on separate lines, because its output is XHTML, it ignores all of the white space, so it just puts it right together, username and password. And in fact, even at that, in the PHP, I didn't even output any white space. In order to do that, I would have had to concatenate a line break or something like that. But instead, what I'll do is a very nice XHTML line break. And so you can see now that we have something that we can do with this. And in order just to create a very, very simple login, I can just check to make sure that this is the same as either a list of usernames and passwords or, and as will be the case here, I just want to check for one. So let's make this easier on myself and just say, just create a new variable called user, and in that insert the user post, or the user part of the post super global. Same with the password. All right, so now, how would I verify just in a simple thing if in a simple if statement, oops, I got to fix my post super global. How would I verify if this username and password was what I expected? So let's say that I wanted the username to be Dan and the password to be CS75, for example. So how would I make sure that this user matches those requirements? What can I do?
With an if statement.
Okay, an if statement. So let's build that. If what?
If param $user equals equals.
Yep, equals equals, that's right. If param $user equals equals, quote, Dan. Okay, now what? So if you close this and do a double ampersand, to basically say if this and something else is true, you have to be sure to enclose all of that in parentheses as well. So if user is Dan and password equals CS75, then I can echo out user is logged in. Otherwise, we can say otherwise with just the simple else. You can echo username, oops, don't want to yell, username or password is incorrect. So just like all of those websites that annoyingly don't tell you which one is wrong, we can be just as annoying to our users. So you'll notice that before, one of the things that I did for the for statement was enclose it in curly braces. And I didn't do that in this case. And this is just shorthand. It's just because I have one command here after the if statement. If I had a second command, because there are no curly braces, just as with many other programming languages, if I did another echo statement here, just to really tell them that they were logged in, what would happen if I actually ran this code? So I have if user is equal to Dan and the password is CS75, it's going to say user is logged in. Then I have another line that is going to say user is logged in. It's all nicely indented and everything, but what would happen? It would be on the same line, but I can fix that pretty easily. So let's actually give this a quick shot. We'll do this to test.
I think you might want to do this. I think you misspelled password.
Did I misspell password?
When you
defined
it there.
Oh, 1S? Thanks. Thank you for that. So a typo that would have caused my script to fail. All right, let's give this a shot. I want to index.php. So now the username is Dan, password is CS75, submit the query. It says user is logged in twice. But now, let's do this wrong. Just some guy trying to log into my, but it still says I've logged in. Why is that? So let's go back to the code. That's right, because the second echo, even though it's indented nicely, isn't part of the if statement, and that's because I don't have curly braces defining the amount of or the number of commands or functions that are part of that particular if statement. So although you can omit them when you only have one function that you want to execute as a result of a particular if statement, you should be careful and default probably to adding the curly braces to the number that you intend. So just by adding the curly braces now, it's changed it completely, and it will only show both when the user and the password is correct, and it won't show either when it is not correct. So let's uncomment this else statement. And now you'll see, even if we were to upload this, which I suppose we can, might as well. Drag this to SFTP. Don't forget, of course, about your permissions, if it would upload. All right. So now let's try this one last time. So Dan, and then I'll type the wrong password. Username or password is incorrect. So this is just a very basic example of a login system with only one username, but you can imagine that if you had all of this data in a database, like we will soon be doing, you will be able to very easily create an online database and a way for people to log in, sort of a login system. And so that is forms. Anybody have any questions? Yeah, sure.
When you say method post from index.php file, mm-hmm. and you reference it in the form.php file, you said user equals post user. Do those have to match?
So here in the... So down here in the form, I said that the method was post. And up here, I used the post superglobal. Yeah, they do have to match. There's another one called get. It can only either be post or get, and they do have to match, yes. But if you use, instead of post, you can actually use request, that superglobal called request, and that actually has the contents of both the post and the get superglobal variable. Yeah, well, you could use request. It is kind of the easy way out. Strictly speaking, I suppose it's better technically to use the correct one, but it's certainly easier to use request versus trying to differentiate between the two. And it is better, especially if you are mixing and matching. So maybe you have a couple of different forms, or maybe have some get requests that have the same name or the same variables as the post request, in which case you would have some sort of a conflict in your request superglobal. Yes?
If you have more than one button, how do you differentiate which button was clicked?
If you have more than one button, how do you differentiate if a separate one was clicked? So generally with the submit buttons, you can... So if you have multiple submit buttons, if the browser shows them, they would both have the same action. They would both do this action. They would post or get to this particular action one. And so in that way, it wouldn't really matter. You could have other buttons that are maybe like a reset button or something like that. But you also can have some buttons that are like JavaScript enabled so that when they are clicked, they can do some sort of JavaScript on your web page or what have you. Even you can initiate JavaScript based on links, so you don't even necessarily need a button to do that. Okay, so there are a couple of useful things that David mentioned in lecture. So, of course, I should talk again about validation of these things. It is very important that your pages all validate. And so if you go to the validator.w3.org, all you have to do is just give it your URL, and you can check to see if it is valid or not. And so this is tentatively valid, and you can scroll down and see what kind of errors or warnings that you are getting. There's no character encoding found, and that's okay. You don't have to have one. It's just, it says that it's tentatively valid, but do keep that in mind that you should check all of yours. So even if we, let's see, I think, did we blow away all of that interesting stuff in index.php? I think we did. So you can even check, you can even validate pages, PHP pages, that where you can pass it variables. So you can get do the question mark, and what did we have before? TFs, when we were referencing the TFs, I forget exactly. Let's see. All right, well, whoops. Index, let's see. Well, I got rid of all of that PHP, but if we were to put that back in, you can even pass the data along in the URL, encode it in the URL from the validator, and it will check if it's changed at all. And so there are some cases where you can have, especially if you're using one PHP file to output all of the content, you will have to check against as many combinations that you possibly can, just because it can change the validation based on its dynamic web page, or because the web page is dynamic. So if you are having some trouble with your web page, you might want to use some of the useful plugins that you can get for Firefox. They're linked off of the web page, the cs75.net page, and one of those is live HTTP headers that he showed. And so let's see if I can resize this to be a little bit friendlier for this screen. So now if I were to refresh this page, we can see all of the HTTP headers that went into processing that page. So you can see that there was a post, that's the very first line up here, post to the form from the host, and a bunch of information about not only my computer, but the server will actually return some information. You can see here that it shows in the HTTP headers what data was submitted via the post. And so user equals Dan and password equals ASDFL. And then I hit the submit query button. So even when you click the submit button, it even passes along that particular data. So I suppose in this way, to go back to your question with the multiple submit buttons, if you named them differently, you could perhaps parse based on which submit button was pressed by taking a look at this submit one. So this kind of implies that if you take a look at this, this looks very similar to that question mark password equals that. So we can even try passing data that way. Username equals Dan, and password equals CS75. And it doesn't like that. So did I mistype anything?
Because you're using post and not get R.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, I'm using. It's the other way around. It's get and not post. Yeah. So that's. Yep. So if I was lazy and had used that request, if I used the request super variable, And I did for the user, but not for the password. So the password probably was not being passed along to the PHP script. So I could change that to request, and it would capture both. And so in this way, this is actually somewhat useful, just in that you can now pass the data either by the form or with entering it into the URL. But generally, you wouldn't want to do this because now the password is in plain text in the URL. So you would definitely want to avoid doing this, especially for a login. But for just some benign data, it would certainly be fine for you to use a method such as this. So you can, like I said, use the HTTP live headers to be able to change it or to take a look at the transaction that's going on, and that might be helpful to see if maybe you mistyped a variable or what have you. So another thing that you can find is what's called Firebug. And I have it downloaded. Let's see. So as you can see, I have Firebug downloaded here, but it has been a while since I've used it, frankly, so let's see if I can find it in Firefox. Okay. Well, here it is. Firebug is disabled. We'll enable it. So now from here, you can actually take a look at, you'll actually parse all of the HTML and the CSS. So instead of using this on Moulin Rouge, let's do it on the on this page. So now with the CSS, and one of the great things about this is that you can, let's see. Let's find a good one to change here. So this is not the one that we want. Let's try styles. Okay, hover. So, whoops. So now this is just one example. You can actually change the CSS on the fly for a particular web page. And so you can, in this way, make changes without actually modifying the CSS file itself. So I'm not modifying the CSS file on CS75 server. I'm actually modifying it locally, but I get to see the updates immediately. And so this was, what I just changed was the hover attribute in CSS from to be blue to match the font color to be black. So now whenever it shows the bottom black line there, I can actually see that it's black rather than what it was before, was that blue. And so you can make quite dramatic changes if you wanted to and if you could find it. So let's find something good. So font family, nope. Nothing too good here. I guess we could also change the link color from blue to black. And so you can see the change immediately. And so if you wanted to save this, you would have to copy the changes and put them in your own file, because as soon as you close this, it wouldn't save the changes anywhere. So you definitely want to copy those and remember those. So it's pretty cool, but like I said, it's not something that I use terribly often, and I suspect that once you get your page just right, you're going to be worrying a lot more about your PHP code rather than the specific color of your links or exactly how the CSS is laid out. Once that's all done, you probably won't have to use that too much. Okay. Any questions about Firebug? So let's take a look then. All right. at a very, well, a not so basic PHP file. So this is one for a web page of my own where there's a whole lot of stuff here that you don't have to know yet. So session start, that's to create sessions in PHP. We're going to talk about that later, I'm sure. It is possible that to include PHP files so that you can do a lot of processing in one file and get it done. So, I mean, you can just have all of that, get all of that processing done and out of the way before you actually do it here in your particular page. And so reasons you might want to do this, or just if you have general or global variables that you want to define, or just a set of functions that you want to be able to define, you can do that in your include files. And so here I actually have a sanitization function that I found off the PHP.net webpage. And one of the things that it does is just to sanitize all of the input strings that come in via the request string, and just make sure that it is all alphanumeric and that I have an idea of what it's going to be, just so that I don't get any sort of strange characters or anything like that. And so here what I did was actually test to see if a particular variable was set. And if it was, then I sanitized the page. But by doing this, I actually can define a default for a particular variable. And so this is kind of what I was talking about before, where you can have content pages that are basically spit out by a get file contents. And so that's what I did. I defaulted to it being home, and I sanitized the page output, and then using XML, I matched it against the database of pages that I have so that I can verify that the content, that the variable P that has been requested actually does have some content page that is present there. And if it's not, then it'll actually spit out a 404. So XML is extremely interesting, and because it's kind of a poor man's database. And I would wager a guess that David will probably talk about it at least a little bit in the next lecture. And so we can go down. We can see that actually, because this page has moved around several times, I actually defined a root for the page. And so it depends where it's hosted that I would want to change this root. And so right now it's just set to nothing because it's very handy. But before, I actually had, it was in a user folder or a courses folder, so I actually had to have a tilde and then the name right there. And so already you can see that the dynamic aspect of the page has become quite handy. So here I just defined basically the layout, and if we remember, we actually went over the CSS of this layout last week, where we were talking about the page and the navigation. But in the navigation, I actually used PHP to spit out the contents of an XML file that contains all of the pages that I have and the pages that I want them to be able to locate or to be able to find. So now I don't have to change a lot of pages. Whenever I want to add a page, I just change this XML file and it will actually be output. So this is all sort of a big preview of things to come, because I don't want to really get too far ahead of where we are, but you can see that here, if a particular page is found, then it will actually say that it's been found, and it will actually select a particular menu item in that navigation just to show that that is the current page. So we can actually, if we were to go take a look at this page, so by default it loads up this web page, but if you remember that P variable, we can actually change that to be one of these other things. So let's say we want it to be the syllabus, and it will actually, whoops, that's embarrassing, syllabus, and it will actually find the particular page. And so even though it's the same index.php page, all I have to do is I basically just have files that have the content that I want to display, and I just have one index.php file that spits out, it does all of this work for me, so that I don't have to copy all of this stuff over again or to be able to do that. And so if you remember from that if statement that we just saw, if that P matches the particular file, it'll actually mark it as selected, and that's how we get that particular effect. And so although this is a bit overkill, certainly for your project zero, you can see that even just a somewhat basic PHP file can be very, very good and are very, very dynamic and useful for even just the somewhat simple web page. So any questions about PHP or SSH, SFTP, XHTML, CSS, anything before all of these sorts of things before you have to submit your project zero? Last chance, because you never know. Well, I would make a joke about us not responding, but that's certainly not true. We'll respond to any emails, but certainly anything that, if you have any questions right now, then do let us know. Otherwise, I think we might end just a little bit early, and everyone can feel free to go home. And we'll hope to see you next week, especially when PHP becomes a lot more complex, maybe.